Coming to you live from St. Louis, Missouri.
It's the Faster Freedom Show.
With your hosts, Sam Prim and Lucas Wolf.
We're talking about freedom.
Sam, we talking about freedom today?
We are talking about freedom. It is good to see you. I feel like you've been a little sporadic with your schedule recently, but you're here and ready to rumble.
It is good. We got the dream team back. You know, Maddie Dubs did a great job filling in. Shano did a great job. But hey, this is the PB&J right
this
here.
This is the PB&J, and we have a lot to talk about today. We're just going to start off with a bang. So,
yeah.
Ken McElroy is, I believe he owns billions in real estate. I don't know if he's a billionaire, but he's been around for a while. And he recently took some lovely time out of his show to call us idiots. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited. We're going to watch it, too,
yes,
right?
Yes, we're going to watch it and break it down. Don't worry.
Yeah.
What do you think about being called an idiot?
Yeah, I don't know. Just, you know, people that call other people idiots are not usually who I want to associate myself with. It's like the exact opposite of what I teach my kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even my 7-year-old can tell this guy is no good.
Yes.
Seriously.
Yeah.
That it makes me steer away from him so much. And I'm so new to the content creation space.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in it for a while and kind of have dealt with people like this. But I'm like, Sam, is this what you guys do? Just sit behind a computer screen and call people idiots? Is that what is part of this?
No, people like Ken Do and Dave Ramsey, they're kind of like the boomers. They're the boomer generation. They're like the tough guys behind a $1,000 camera calling people idiots that they would never call to their face. So I react to people's videos, but I don't call them names.
Yeah.
I usually react to them reacting to me, or I just disagree or agree with their strategy.
Yeah.
Usually agree with, sometimes disagree with, but it's never like idiots, like name calling. It's so childish and immature.
Yeah.
It's a very much a boomer thing. Like, we're millennials, they're boomers. Boomers don't like millennials. I don't know if millennials
they're
like,
tough. We're not.
Yeah,
we get it.
They're awesome. They're incredible.
Yeah.
He grew his wealth on Robert Kiyosaki's coattails. I get it. Like, he rode that.
We
didn't have any coattails to ride, Ken.
Yeah.
So if I was around Robert during that uprising, maybe I could be calling people idiots. But
yeah.
I just don't like to call people names.
Yeah. Yeah. Ken's got a good rental portfolio, no
good
business as well.
I think he's probably a good businessman. Probably a decent enough dude. It's just when you get that camera gets in front of you, I get it. You get hypey sometimes, but calling people names is pretty immature.
They're pretty childish, man.
Very childish.
Yeah.
Very childish.
Let's see what he has to say about us. Can we do that?
Yes, we can do
that.
So we're going to watch the video. It's not very long. So we're going to watch it, and then we're going to react. We're going to react. No, or we're going to watch the whole thing. We watch half of it.
We're going to watch half of it.
All right, we're going to watch half of it. We're going to watch his first half. He calls me an idiot. Second half, he calls Luke an idiot. So we're going to watch it. And then we're going to give our respectful, factual rebuttal and not make generalizations and inaccurate statements like my man in the red vest.
Yeah, he's got a sport jacket game, that's for sure.
Yep, for sure. All right, let's watch it.
Buy a rental, it's going to negatively cash flow $50 a month. We're still going to do it because guess what? Next year, rental rates are going to go up. Our costs will generally stay the same, and we're locked in for rates, and we may be able to refinance. So
yeah.
We will cash flow negatively for a short period of time to get that $200,000 over that 10 years.
Those guys are idiots.
Mm.
That's the bottom line.
First
of all, who wants to write a check every month? And he made two really bad statements. The first one was, rents are going to go up and costs are going to stay the same. So I don't know anybody who's bought any real estate where rents go up every single year and costs stay the same. Both, number one, expenses always go up. And two, rents do not always go up. I'm not sure what these guys' angle is, but essentially, if you want to write a check every month and hope that rents go up and hope that expenses stay the same, do whatever they say.
All right, so that's the first one. So can I go first?
Please.
You got more stats behind
it. Yeah.
So in general, two things, several things, but the first one is he purposely clipped out, or his team did. We said that we would not suggest new real estate investors doing this.
Yeah.
We bought $50 million worth of real estate, not using any of our own money, not riding Robert Kiyosaki's coattails like Ken. So we own enough real estate that losing $50 a month for a short period of time is good for us. So we didn't tell other people to do that. We're willing to do that, and we'll get into all the numbers. But in general, you know, losing a little bit of money, and I said the other thing he kind of poked a little bit at was expenses. I said generally stay the same. My mortgage and my interest are going to stay the same for at least 3 to 5 years, and you have some numbers to back that up. I said generally stay the same. Now, of course, expenses will go up over time. And Lucas has some numbers to prove that that rental rates go up even more over time. We don't have this exact stat, but last time I checked, I think in the past like 60 years or 50 years, rental rates have gone up every year except one or two.
Yeah.
So rental rates do go up. We're talking like 98% of the time, and they go up at a much higher clip, which you'll get into, than expenses. So why don't you get into your numbers a little bit? But
yeah, I'm going to touch on what you said a little bit there. Losing $50 a month for your first any investment like is probably not a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. We went cash flow heavy on our first many properties. Right now we're a little more focused on equity and the higher quality assets with some cash flow as well. We don't buy assets currently that cash flow negative $50 a month. That was correct. Just an example of the other powers of real estate that come with it. The cash flow is huge, right? So especially if you don't have another portion of your portfolio generating high cash flow, you got to be focused on cash flow, period. But you'll get to a point where you kind of level up and cash flow is a little less important than it was when you started building your portfolio. So there's other important things when investing in real estate, right? And that's appreciation is a big part of that. And that in tandem with paying your mortgage down, your debt payment, and having that equity is super, super powerful, right? Do you think equity is an important part of real estate?
I think it's the most important part of real estate, in my opinion. So we'll get into some other numbers. But in general, my whole goal and what we're talking about is, you know, that $200,000 I mentioned. That means I say we make about $200,000 every 10 years on rentals that we own because the properties go up in value. They do. Real estate doubles in value every 15 years. I'm kind of known for saying that because I say it so much because I like second guess myself when I go back and look at the stats, and it's the same every time because they're stats. Real estate doubles in value every 15 years, and then losing $50 a month but paying all other expenses and the principal pay down, those two things, the first few parts of the passive wealth trifecta, that is way more important. Again, just simple math, we'll get into the other stuff, but simple math is, you know, the property is going to double in value, and in 15 years the mortgage is going to be paid down, and so I will, you know, spend a few grand out of pocket over 15 years. It's just a few grand to make hundreds of thousands is kind of what I look at it as.
Correct. And it won't be forever.
Correct.
And that's what we're going to get into now. Like when we make investment purchase decisions, we look at owning these assets for a long period of time. So it's not, you know, day one's important, but it's more important in year 5, year 10, year 20, how this thing is performing.
Yes.
So we have calculators and models that project all this out for us. And it's a big part of what we how we make that decision. So a big part of that is what Ken talked about is, you know, expenses going up and rents not going up. So he's like, you know, the perfect pessimist in this situation, right?
Well, he hangs out with Kiyosaki, so
Yeah, that makes sense. Plenty of doomsday videos out there for Ken if you want to go watch them and get scared shitless. But both go up.
Yes.
You know, expenses are going to go up. And
some expenses, not all expenses.
Yes, the good part about acquiring real estate is you can utilize leverage to do that. And if you utilize smart leverage, you can lock in that and that not go up for a long
period of
time.
Your mortgage and interest you can lock in for 30 if you're doing it. If you're doing a residential mortgage on your first few, or you could do what we did. We locked in rates for 10 years. So you can lock in. You have a known fixed expense for 10 to 30 years if you do it smartly.
For sure. So we're not going to look at that going up at the moment. But there are variable expenses that do rise in cost. Ken is right for once.
Ken.
Yeah, good job, buddy. Costs do go up.
Kiyosaki probably was in his ear telling him.
Yeah, hey,
say this.
Inflation, have you?
Say this. Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the variable expenses, some of the main variable expenses in owning a rental property. That's insurance, real estate taxes, and maintenance and repairs. So those are going to go up over time, period. Those usually go up, you know, every year is a little different. We were just talking about sometimes real estate taxes go down and then other years
very
they jump
rarely,
up a big percentage.
But so, real estate taxes aren't guaranteed to go up huge every year.
In general, you know, let's follow inflation for this.
Okay.
Right now, what are we at inflation-wise? Right around
3%. A little over 3, yep.
So I know we've been higher in the past, but rents were also higher in the past few years as well. So let's use, on average, 3% is probably a little high, but let's use 3%. So if you own a rental property, we're talking one single family rental, and this is in the Midwest here, so numbers might be a little skewed based on your area. But in general, say your insurance on that property is $1,000 a year. Your real estate taxes or property taxes are $2,000 a year, and your upkeep, your maintenance is $1,500 a year on that property. Okay, so that's $4,500 a year in variable expenses
that will go up 2 to 3% a year.
Let's say 3%.
Okay,
that's $135 that goes up year over year.
Okay,
okay, so that goes up to on year two to from $4,500 to $4,635.
Perfect. Okay? Yep.
So it goes up. He's right. It does go up. All right. So since, let's talk rents now. Since 1980, Prem, rental growth has outpaced inflation by 1.27%.
Okay. So it's growing up faster than inflation.
Correct.
And it's on?
I don't know where you're going with that, but help me out.
A bigger number.
A bigger number. Yeah. So
I thought you for sure would get that.
That's all right. Hey, so we're a little rusty.
We're idiots.
And so. We're idiots. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So looking at rental growth, right? So if we're at 3% inflation, if we're trending how we've trended the past 45 years, rental growth should be 4.27%, 1.27% higher than inflation, right? So a house with those expense numbers in our area rents for about $1,500 a month.
Yep.
Okay. That is $18,000 a year. Okay.
So $18,000. Okay.
$18,000 year one, just like $4,500 in expenses year one. Year two, that $18,000 goes up 4.27%. That's $768 a year. So it goes up to $18,768. So $768 increase annually with the rent. $135 increase annually for the expenses. That's a difference of $633.
So when I said rents, or when I said, so when I said
a year, expense, that's 1 year. Well, and that only is going to compound more in
so
your
when
favor.
I said expenses generally stay the same, which he left that word out. When I say expenses generally stay the same and rent will outpace it, I guess I was right.
You were right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Just double checking that.
The idiot got that one right.
Every once in a while, you know, a blind squirrel finds a nut.
Yeah.
A other thing I thought when you were saying that, Walls, is 1980 is 45 years ago. That is insane.
I know. We were born in the 80s. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's wild. Awesome. So those are some, we still have more to break down, by the way. He rips on Lucas here in a minute.
Yes.
So anything else you want to round out with that? I think we kind of covered the basis of A, don't be a child and call people idiots. You're a grown-ass man. B, you know, the fact that generally expenses do kind of stay the same and rent will outpace. That rent goes up almost every single year. It's outpaced inflation. And then I think those were the main points. Any other points you kind of...
Yeah, and just, you know, invest for the long haul.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Invest for the long haul. And we're going to talk about the last part of the past wealth trifecta here in a minute. And he's going to talk a minute about what he would do with $50. Mm. He would rather, we'll get into that, but
okay.
Ready for round two?
Let's do it, man.
All right.
So let's just do depreciation on
that
house. Like depreciation, say that house is cost basis $200,000 ballpark.
Okay.
We would get to write off over $7,000 a year in income with that one house. So $50 a month, who freaking cares?
And then they're just throwing the depreciation thing in there just to make it sound even better. The purpose of depreciation is to write off cash flow. And in this particular situation, there is no cash flow. So I don't know why you would buy a negative cash flow property and then try to market it by saying there's also depreciation. It makes no sense. Why would I take my hard-earned money out of something that's actually making money, even if it's a small amount, 2, 3, 4% a year, let's say, and then stick it into something that's negative, hoping that rents will go up and hoping that expenses will stay the same. And then I just throw the confusing word depreciation at the end just to make it all sound like they know what they're talking about, which of course they don't.
So he started out, this entire YouTube video started out with me and you, so he's using us as the hook.
Yeah.
He's kind of riding our coattails a little bit now.
Yeah.
He's a professional coattail rider.
He's used to that.
Coattail on his cool coat. So do you want to start this one off or do you want me to?
Kick it off.
All right. So a couple things there. The biggest thing that stuck out to me was he was saying, and again, of course, he didn't watch our video, so there's no context. He just got it clipped up and, you know, picked out parts that worked for him. He's saying that he would rather put $50 a month towards something that makes 2% return, which is less than inflation for the most most of the time, so lose money every month, then put $50 a month towards real estate that doubles in value every 15 years, that the tenant pays the mortgage down, that you get everything we talked about, knowing that inflation is going to ride your rental rates up more than expenses are going up. It's factual, it's data. So that's just a wild, weird statement to say that, because the point is, and if he knew that and watched this, we'd buy real estate using none of our own money. So using none of my own money to own this asset, than $50 of my own money to maintain this asset while real estate's doing what it does mm-hmm. is a much better use of putting $50 into a CD that makes 2% and you don't yeah. own anything with it. So that's the biggest thing that stuck out to me.
Yeah, and he's right. If you wanted to lower your taxable income, and we're talking about depreciation now.
Hold on real quick. Andrew says, we are happy Ken mentioned it. He wasn't trying to be mean. He has good intentions. He called us idiots and said we don't know what we're talking about. I don't know how good intention that is. I'm not like mad at him. I'd love to sit down and be on his show. But anyways, that's just fine.
Yeah, no. It seems like a really good guy.
Yeah, it seems really, he's really nice, really positive.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, depreciation. So obviously you don't have any income to write off on that one particular property.
Yep,
but,
so good,
but we're thinking a little bigger than this, you know. Whether you have another portfolio or a fix and flip business or maybe some other active income within real estate. There's a lot of nuances around depreciation and when you can use it. But if you are a real estate professional of some degree, you can write off other income that property, that one house that we're talking about that loses $50 a month, that you can depreciate $7,000 of your taxable income. It doesn't have to be income from that particular property.
Correct. You can stretch that out. Yeah, as real estate professionals, exactly what you said, we can take that $7,000 depreciation and use that on other cash producing assets or other businesses. Mm-hmm. It all rolls up into the return. So yes, that is just a I know he knows that I don't know if he doesn't think we're real estate professionals, not trying to poke at him, but like if you're a real estate professional, which I believe is 250 hours a year, you can use that depreciation on other parts of your business, which we do.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. So that's a good one. So that depreciation.
And it's so important, and he knows it's important.
Yeah.
Like he utilizes depreciation to the max to pay zero taxes. Yes. I guarantee you that dude pays zero taxes. Mm-hmm. Zero contribution to society type of guy.
Yes.
Just kidding on that a little bit, but he utilizes depreciation to the fullest. So to say it's not a powerful thing, and when it's saving him millions, if not tens of millions in taxes every year, is completely
probably tens of millions. Because again, this so let's just the passive wealth trifecta part is properties go up in value. Tenant pays a mortgage down, and you get cash flow, and you get depreciation. So we could make it a quad trifecta if we wanted to.
Yeah.
But in general, it all works together. Is the whole purpose of that video that me and you shot on shooting shit on our podcast was. It is something that you got to look at the whole picture, and real estate does a lot more than just cash flow, and you have to look at other things than just that.
Yeah, and depreciation is a big part of it. You know, I wouldn't buy just for depreciation, but some people do.
Yes, 100% some people do.
We don't. It's just part of the puzzle, and just like cash flow is part of the puzzle, just like equity growth is part of the puzzle. You got to look at the whole puzzle and plan out for the future.
Yeah, for sure. So in general,
that's a great point by Tom.
What did Tom say?
Or if your spouse is a real estate professional to offset your W-2.
Exactly. There you go. So that's a good way to look. It all rolls down to your tax statement. So in general, it's social media. I don't really care. Ken can talk all he wants behind that behind the camera. But it's I was pleased to see this. This is not quite like Dave Ramsey calling me a liar. But it's Ken's got a big brand, big name. He's got.
Yeah. I'm happy to be dragged in with you.
Yeah,
man.
I know
you went to battle a few times, so it's
you're going to be getting. I got backup. You hang out with me, you're going to get some shot fired at you.
Let's go, man.
So in general, Dave Ramsey called me a liar. He called us idiots. So it's one of those things where they're both like, and I
Ken, just because we're having fun and smiling does not make us idiots.
Yeah, he doesn't
man.
Look like he's having fun at all.
You don't have to be miserable to be smart, bro.
Yeah, you don't have to be miserable to be successful. You can have fun and be successful.
Yeah, have some fun, man.
He's got the success side for sure, but I don't know if he has the happiness side.
Yeah.
But in general, I appreciate you doing that, Ken. Thank you. That was fun. You got a hell of a business. But maybe either do a little more research next time. Or I guess just do that again because this video will get views and we'll both grow together. So whatever it works. Appreciate
teamwork,
you, Ken.
Yeah.
Teamwork makes the dream work, Ken. So there you go. There's our response to Ken McElroy. Big name, big brand, big money. That is what it is.
Yeah, so that was our opening rant, little Ken talk, and appreciate all the comments. Drop those questions in there, comments. Hang out with us. Everyone that you throw out there, we're looking at. So would love to answer any guys' questions as we go into our
And our boy
segment.
Derek Lambert.
Shout out DJL. I saw the
DJL.
What do you think his middle name is? James?
Derek. John. Jonathan.
You're John.
Yeah.
So, okay.
What's the common one? Derek James sounds better than Derek John, though.
Yeah.
And then also, he was the manager on our high school basketball team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude's a stud for sure.
Yeah, he's good. He's got a couple good businesses as well. Cool. Awesome. Well, yeah, let us know where you're from in the chat box. Before we get into the main segment, which we're going to talk about how to become a millionaire in less than 5 years, spoiler alert, we have a plan for you to do that. It does require you to work, though. It's not one of those things where you can ride a crypto wave and become a millionaire, or you can sit on your butt and become a millionaire. But there is a reasonable plan, a reasonable path for you to become a millionaire in the next 5 years we're going to go over. But before we do that, I want to let everybody know about Freedom Fest. We literally just launched this the other day. It is going to be held in St. Louis. It's our first in-person event. Look at that. Look at those studs. So I'm taking a different approach. I have noticed, Lucas, on social media, and in general, when you kind of, if everybody's doing one thing, doing the other thing is sometimes a good thing. And that's what we're doing here. So most of these events, and I am speaking at one today in St. Louis, and I'm speaking at one in April in California, and I'm speaking at one in July in Las Vegas. I think they're great. They're worth the price of admission, but I don't know that the attendees benefit a ton from watching a celebrity or watching somebody with a big social media following speak on stage. Like 10X with Grant Cardone, I kind of go at him a little bit just because I think he's a little bit out there. But like, how much am I going to learn from Dwayne The Rock Johnson on his 10X stage? Like, Dwayne made millions as an actor, and then he deployed that in business wisely. Same with Kevin Hart. Like, those type of people are great, but that's not realistic. People attending Freedom Fest aren't going to make hundreds of millions of dollars a year as actors and deploy that into business. So our goal is to meet the attendees where they are and have our team speak, not celebrity speak that made money elsewhere. Have our team speak. We got our property manager that manages 400 doors. We got our COO that manages a house buying company that flips 250 houses a year. We got our coaches. We got Shelly, who's probably the best agent business owner, female lady boss out there, and then me and you. So we have just our team speaking on what we do. We're going to do a presentation, then we're going to do a workshop. They're going to have a notebook, and they're going to write down their financial freedom number. We're going to show them how to get that. So it's going to be very customizable, small, and intimate, as opposed to just staring, you know, doing that to somebody on stage.
It reminds me a lot of the Kin thing still. Like billionaire boomers teaching people trying to get started is, you know, it's kind of lost.
Because
honestly.
He would make it work today, but his old strategies would not work.
In his grasp on reality and people trying to get started probably is limited to none, I would say. So, you know, we're in the trenches with our teams, you know, millennials, and we got a couple boomers in there too. So we don't.
Who's the boomers there?
Is he not?
45, is that a boomer?
I think so. I think
he's a young boomer. Kiki, he doesn't look like it.
Yeah. So I think it's like 83.
Isn't Generation X?
Oh, X. We missed one in there. Okay, gotcha.
But anyways, it's Faster Freedom, our company, fest.com. So FasterFreedomFest.com, you can sign up. It's $397
it's dirt cheap. Yeah. We're not, you know, looking to make a whole bunch of money.
No,
off this.
I don't know that
this
we'll
is
make
just
it.
Straight value and changing people's lives.
Yeah, and we'll tell you about our community at the end, but it's not going to be like a lot of these are just pitch fests. It's not going to be that. Yeah. So there's going to be a ton of value. I promise it's going to be worth a couple hundred bucks, and it's in our office. You're going to be hanging out, seeing our digs. We're going to do office tours. It's gonna be a lot of fun. We're providing a lunch each day and breakfast. So yeah, I think we'll come out ahead a little bit on it, but not a ton. It's more about just getting the brand out and trying our first in-person event and leading with value, not leading with, you know, Googling at somebody on stage. So FasterFreedomFest.com. Check it out May 9th and 10th here in St. Louis. So seats are limited. If you're watching this now, they're not going to sell out in the next few, you know, days or weeks. So you got time, but I think eventually it will sell out. So just keep it on your radar if you're interested.
All right.
Ready,
Rock? I'll be there, Sam.
You'll be there. You will be speaking. You're on the panel. I think you're speaking day two. You're speaking a few times.
Yeah, so I'll be speaking on how to invest in properties and lose $50 a month.
Yes, exactly. And I'll be speaking on how to make fun of other people that you'll never actually meet in person.
Beautiful.
Yes. Yep. Awesome. I love it. All right, here we go. So let's get into the main segment. So what we're going to talk about now is how to become a millionaire in 5 years or less. It's a lot of work. We're going to utilize leverage and real estate to do it. But this is the plan and the path that I think most people can at least get on. Not everybody can get on this right away, but this is a general path, I think, that has a pretty low barrier of entry to become a millionaire. We're trying to help people create wealth, not widgets. I say that a lot. Sometimes I think that's super like deep, which you don't know anything about. Check mark.
Tally.
Sometimes I think it doesn't really make sense. But anyways, that's what I say a lot. We create wealth, not widgets, and wealth takes time.
Okay.
You good with that?
I'm good with that, bro.
Okay.
Let's dig in. So millionaire in 5 years.
Yeah. So in general, how I would start this whole thing out is I want people to work hard, but I don't want people to live frugally. That's my whole issue with the Dave Ramsey, all that kind of stuff is part of what they preach, aside from no debt, is just living a very frugal life, saving your money, pinching pennies. I prefer, life's not super long. I prefer to enjoy life. So part of my plan for you and our plan going forward with this little 5-year deal we're doing is figuring out your current active income. If you need more of that, we can work on that. We're going to work on that. But I want people to enjoy their life. I don't want people to go out to eat once a year and not go on vacation for 5 years to become a millionaire. I wanted to have that both and lifestyle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think to me it's, you know, because I started out making $44,000 a year. You know,
24.
Yeah, 24 plus commissions, but mine was just salary.
That first half of the year was 17 grand, I looked. So 2011, yeah. I started in May, made 17 grand.
Gotta build the business.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, what I'm saying is when, you know, you have a smaller salary before you get into real estate, you got to understand your finances. And that if you understand your personal finances just from a super simplistic view, money coming in, money going out, it's going to be much more easier to get into business. Mm-hmm. And then on the personal side of things, even if you don't make a whole bunch of money and you can understand a budget, know a budget, and figure out what your expenses are from a monthly standpoint, there still can be some discretionary income above that, hopefully, that you can go and do fun stuff with. But it's hard to do the fun stuff, in my eyes, when you don't understand your budget. You can't just go out and spend to spend and spend more than you have. But you got to carve out some room in your budget for entertainment of some sort. I think that's super powerful.
No, I agree. I think it just makes life more enjoyable.
Yeah.
You know, we're here to have, try to create impact and have fun while doing it. I mean, one of our, our Midwest Property Group mission statement is, what is it? It's an
good God. What is it?
Own a billion dollars or something.
Oh, you're talking about our summit?
It just says, have fun while doing it is my point. It's written down on a sheet of paper.
Oh, that's our Prosper. Yeah. Build a billion-dollar company, have fun while doing it.
Yeah. What's up, Jacob? Hello. Let us know where you're from, anybody on here, and what questions you have. We'll sneak them in as we get going. We're talking about how to realistically become a millionaire or damn close in 5 years or less for normal people is kind of the whole pitch we're doing.
Do you think you're going to talk about real estate at all?
I don't think so. My goal is for you to put $500 a month into Bitcoin. For the next 5 years, see what happens.
Might work.
It actually might work. Bitcoin is nuts. I checked it today. It was down a decent amount, but I think it hasn't gone down in a long time for us, so it's gonna fluctuate.
At least they didn't freeze your account today.
They did not freeze.
So
they didn't
freeze that much.
They didn't freeze it. They just
took all the money out of it.
Just like TikTok did. Yeah. I'm banned on TikTok right now.
Yeah, just a temporary blip.
It says permanently banned. I hope that's not the case. I don't think it is.
I doubt it.
So anyways, banned on TikTok for sending people to freerentalwebinar.com, which is just a 20-minute training on how to buy real estate. So don't know what that's about, but that's what it's about. So, all right. So we kind of set the table of understanding your finances, I think, is important.
Yeah.
Trying to live a decent, fun life while, you know, building wealth at the same time is I just assume that's what people want. And some of the kickback I get is not everybody wants that.
Yeah.
Like when I get into it with Taylor, who was a guest a couple of weeks ago, he's like, not everybody wants that, like, financial freedom. Not everybody wants to quit their job. So he's right. And part of my assumption is people do want financial freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to become a millionaire in 5 years, the best way to do that, and we'll break it down, is leverage debt to buy real estate.
Yeah. And just because you're a millionaire in 5 years, it doesn't necessarily equate to financial freedom in 5 years.
It probably
doesn't. This is very different.
Yeah, but financial freedom is more about active income.
Yeah.
And then this millionaire wealth status is more about, you know, passive wealth and some passive income. But yeah, this is not, you're not going to be able to quit your job in 5 years with this plan.
Yeah, that is not this plan. We could do a quicker plan than that that'll take much less time. This is building wealth and becoming a millionaire in 5 years.
Yes, cool. All right, so in general, we're gonna go down the BRRRRS method. We'll keep the questions coming. Ojaj?
Yeah, Mr. Lopez. We'll call
I love that name, but it's like JoJo backwards.
Yeah, it is. That's cool.
So we'll get to that. But in general, utilizing the BRRRRS method is going to be our strategy that we're going to break down and show you some actual numbers. But buying real estate using other people's money with the BRRRRS method, single families, it's the lowest barrier of entry. You can get loans on it. You can do a personal name or through businesses and LLC. So in general, we're going to leverage other people's money to buy real estate to become a millionaire in 5 years. I don't know that there's another realistic path to do it, honestly, in that short period of time.
And I think, like, you know, we say, like, real estate millionaire in 5 years. And then you put a poll out on social media the other day was like, how am I going to buy all this real estate? I don't have any money. I don't have enough money to buy real estate, right? Mm-hmm. And so that is the main block for most people that we've seen is how do I fund these type of projects? You know, I don't have either 100% of the purchase price or I don't have 20% of the purchase price, which is could add up by itself. So with our strategy, you don't need that. We're going to force that equity with buying at a discount and rehabbing the property.
Yeah, for sure. Like I put out a poll and I was like, why aren't you investing in real estate? And the number one answer by far was funding.
Yeah.
They don't have the personal funds or they don't know where to find the funds. So mm-hmm. We'll start out with that then. Walzer, you want to get to Ojo's question?
Yeah. I'm gonna set the table a little bit. So let's think big picture here. So in 5 years, you're going to need some rental properties to become with what we think the best ways to get there. You're going to need some rental properties to become a millionaire. So mm-hmm. Probably need some sort of assumptions out there. What's the national house average across the country, like 400,000
415 or something like
that. Let's say 400,000. So the way we do it, we build in 20% equity
minimum
every single deal. So that's $80,000, right? So not even talking about appreciation or debt pay down. If we needed to become,
what about cash flow, Ken?
We got to put -50 a month for every one of these.
Perfect. Let's do it.
All right. So to get $1 million in equity is, which would be part of this plan, real estate equity, we need to divide $1 million by $80,000, right? Because okay. That's that average equity for that the country, example, right? Yep. So that's 12 and a half rentals, right? So let's say like 15.
Okay.
15 rentals for this plan. Does that
sound
about right?
Yeah, 15 rentals sounds fair because probably that $400,000 price point isn't always going to be the best rental price point. So you might be in that $350,000 price point, $300,000. So you're not going to get as much equity. And then also, as I said, real estate does double in value every 15 years. So the rental properties you buy year one will have more equity year five. But we're not going to like count on that too much because we're not going to get too into the math. But the rental properties you buy year one, by year five, they will have gone up mm-hmm. probably 20% in value, maybe 10%. And then the mortgages will get paid down. I think you said we make $18,000 a week. In principal debt pay down. So that does happen.
Hot.
Yeah, that does happen. So we're not really going to put that in there, but just so you know, there is that. So that if you have 60 grand equity in your house you bought year one, by year five, I'm going to say that's going to be close to 100 with properties going up in value and tenants paying down the principal payment. So that is going to be part of it.
So we're going to say 15, but with debt pay down, with some appreciation,
it could be less.
That would get you well over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just put 15 as a number if you're okay with that.
I'm good. So that is 3 a year?
Well, yeah. So in general, about 3 a year. But you know it doesn't happen like that, Mr. Sam. You know ours didn't happen like
ours
that,
does
Mr.
Not.
Sam.
Mr. Sam.
That's what our kids
what our kids, your call, kids call me. Well, yeah.
Yeah, most kids call you that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's Mr. Sam.
Yep.
Yeah,
and they're like, run away. He's fucking crazy.
And you're like, rah!
And then they cry and
yeah.
I laugh.
Yeah, yep. They do. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. All right, so I don't know. I'm going to throw a hot take out there for
Uh-oh.
Year one. I say year one, you do not buy a rental property.
That's a hot take.
I say year one, you don't do it. I say you dive in hard to education.
Not deep, though.
Hard.
Well, other people deep, but not you.
Not me.
Okay.
Nope. Tally number two. Educate the right education, but you know that's only a small percentage of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to take some action. My first action would be a fix and flip.
Okay.
Still. Even though our goal is to be a
millionaire. We didn't do that.
I know. Well, that's, we're trying to teach people our mistakes.
That's true.
My first action would be a fix and flip. Get 20, 30, 40 grand profit and set that in your business account for some operating reserves as you build your rental portfolio. That's what I would do. And what?
And when you do a flip, you're going to get that extra cash, but then you're also going to make connections with contractors.
Yep.
You're going to deal with wholesalers. You're going to have real estate agents in your corner. You're going to have an insurance figured out.
Yeah.
You're going to have your title company figured out. You're going to have mm-hmm. potentially in that time, you're going to be talking to banks. But in general, and you know what you can do? You can make a pivot like we did and turn that into a rental if you want. But I like your plan because you're going to start to build those connections that
yes.
you're going to use later when you grow and scale to a certain degree. 15 and
yeah.
4 years at this point is,
yep.
is scaling pretty quick.
Buying, fixing up, and selling, it's very similar process to the BRRRR strategy. Instead of finding someone to move
into
rent, you just sell it on the back end. So you have 80% of it done, and then you streamline that process, and then the net. And this is 5 years. If I'm teaching people this from scratch, I'm saying 2 or 3 flips usually to really get that process down before you go rehab your first rental. But since we're kind of on a little quick timeline, let's do one.
Okay.
Are you okay with that? Year one, education and flips.
T-York, you good with that? T-York's good with it. Okay, good. All right. So T-York's the boss, so that's fine.
Okay.
All right. So year one, you're educating, and I want to go too much into this, but everybody I know that has done something along these lines has paid for that education.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to talk about our community.
Could be your flip too.
We're not going to talk about our community, but in general, the most successful people I know that actually can do something like this, usually in year one, they get the ball rolling with some paid education, because it's a pay to play game.
Yeah.
You can get a ton of great stuff for free online, but like the right program is going to just make everything so much smoother.
Yep. Sam and I did it, and in the first few years we didn't get any education, and we fought through a lot of mistakes, and then we're like, all right, we're idiots, obviously. Yes. As Ken says, so we need to go around some smarter people, and that really helped us scale and streamline things in the second half of our investing career.
It was very easy for us to be the dumbest person in the room, to put it that way, because we're idiots.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Most rooms we go into, lunch at Taco Bell today, I'll be the dumbest person in there.
Yeah.
So in general,
what's your go-to T-Bell order?
Every time it's a chicken quesadilla with no jalapeno sauce.
Dude,
soft
that's been
taco.
Your order for a long time.
I do like a cheese gordita crunch is pretty good.
Very good.
Love me some Crunchwrap Supreme. No
very
Toms.
Good. What's Tom?
Tomatoes.
Oh, is that what you say?
No, I said no tomatoes.
Okay, I don't know if that's like the
no, it's
lingo.
Not the Taco Bell. No, but I do love me some Taco Bell.
I do too. I don't eat it very often, or I try not to.
I'm probably
right?
like once a month, maybe.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, that's probably what I am too. But just fast food in general, I try not to. You know, life happens, so you get that. But T-Bell's a good one if you need a quick go-to.
T-Bell kind of hits every time.
Yeah, it hits. It don't miss.
It don't miss. And then I've been doing a little bit of the cinnamon twist. Those ain't bad.
Those are great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those remind me of like my childhood. Like,
yes.
All right. Anyway, so year one. Cool. I think we're good with
year one. Yeah, we made a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Hopefully you got some education for free or paid. Let you handle that. But year one, you got some money in the bank. Now you're ready to step your foot on the wealth gas pedal.
Yeah, I guess. I think you're still going to have quite a learning curve with that first property. Maybe not with construction. So year two, I'm saying one.
Lucas.
I'm saying one. I'm telling you,
12
this is
months
very,
are going to do one.
This part is very similar to us.
Oh, we did.
I mean, if you can do more, go ahead. Sorry, a big part of this is you still need some sort of active income to live off of.
Yeah, we said that. Yeah, you're keeping your job at
keeping
this
your
point.
Job
this isn't
at this
creating
point.
Financial freedom. We're creating $1 million of equity for you.
Yeah, you want to build some wealth here and keep your job for now. Okay, I'm saying one in year two, and you obviously have some construction things figured out because you did the flip, and now you got to figure out property management a little bit.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe some financing on the rental side of things and setting up your books and finding a property manager, figuring out how to manage yourself and get that cooking and rolling and get some rental income coming in and then go out for that next one. So maybe you could do it quicker than in your second year, just one, but I am okay with that because I know how quickly it can scale once you get efficient. So it's not like this, Sam. It's not like this. It's like,
it's called a hockey stick curve is what it's called. We'll call that the Bitcoin curve.
Yeah.
So in general, I think that all makes sense. I guess I'm okay with your plan of just one. I think if people really want to kick this, they could potentially do another one this year. And the biggest difference is going to be you're not selling it. You need to get approved with the bank, and they need to approve a tenant. So those are the big things. And something we kind of glossed over that we talked about but didn't dig into, I want to dig into right now because we got a little bit of time, is finding those lending sources. Let's talk a little bit about that because that's the number one issue people have. So in general, we're going to use private money, hard money, and small local banks. Those are your kind of three buckets that you're going to be digging into. So you want to talk a little bit about those just because some people may say, yeah, I understand your plan, but how do I get the money to do it?
For sure. So two different types of funding. You got the short term and the long term. So the short term is used to acquire a distressed property and rehab that property. So that could be a private lender or a hard money lender. So there's hard money lending businesses that are very reputable in every single market in the country that love lending on this type of product. That is their job. Mm-hmm. They love working with local investors and help them build a rental portfolio.
And are passionate about newer that. newer because they understand they want to grow their business. Yes. They're going to have to do it through new clients.
Yes. So, it'll usually be like a 6-month loan or a 12-month loan with options to renew if you don't get your project done in time. But the idea is to 100% finance 100% of the purchase price and the rehab with some sort of combination of hard money and private lenders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I hit on hard money a little bit. You want to talk about private
lenders?
Yeah,
private money. This has been a big topic for me recently just because with our students and talking to people and you know, getting involved with more people and talking at these events and dealing with newer people, a big hiccup they have is I don't know any private lenders. And they don't know any private lenders with their like vision of what a private lender is, mm-hmm. but they don't know what a real private lender is. I always say like the traditional private lenders and a lot of our private lenders are like insurance agents, police officers,
yeah.
like, you know, normal engineers, normal everyday people. A private lender is not a rich parent. It can be good for you if you have that.
Yeah. Use them. If
yeah.
you have it. Don't be afraid.
But
you
most
can
of
have,
the,
you can have some value to them as well.
100%.
Like giving them a return.
But most of the time it is a relation that you know that somebody is just in their 40s and 50s. They got a W-2 job. They've worked at for 20 years. They got a
yeah.
house they've lived there for 20 years. Their kids are in high school. They got a decent job. They're conservative. You
yeah.
want these type of people. And I was at an event last week and somebody asked, well, what do you do with that conservative, you know, person that's like has their money? And well, that's, you just give them another conservative return. You're not asking for all of their money. So they have a 401k they can borrow
mm-hmm.
against. They have, number one is an IRA. They can self-direct. They just have money that they can access somewhere somehow. They have 800 grand in their retirement account between all of their.
Yeah.
You're asking for 100. You're not asking for the entire
yeah.
thing. You're giving them a
and
double.
And you can grow that over time.
Yeah,
but it starts, you know. And 100 might seem big, but to these people, it's only a small portion of their portfolio. So they might start with 25 grand,
mm-hmm.
seriously, just to fund a rehab. They might start with 50, 75, 100, whatever it is, take it
mm-hmm.
and then prove the model with one or two of these BRRRR deals
mm-hmm.
and then look to grow that with that individual person over time, as well as reach out to find other people to help fund your deals too.
Yeah, and they're probably not strangers. So they're going to want to help you. And, you know, if you really boil it down, you're helping each other. You're
yeah.
giving them a pretty much guaranteed double-digit return. They're not getting that anywhere else.
Yeah.
And they're helping you. So they are going to be more likely to potentially grow that. Like, I can make money and help Lucas? Like, yeah, that's awesome. So
thanks,
they
man.
Do have that attitude, yeah. I feel like.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's networking, right? You gotta get out there and let people know what you're looking for. Be intentional. Whether it's a contractor you're looking for, go to a networking event and look for that contractor. Whether it's deals, go meet with wholesalers and real estate agents. If it's private money, you know, there's probably certain events that have a lot of different private money lenders, but it's probably your local meetups
mm-hmm.
as well. Sam and I found 3 new private lenders at our local meetup just one meeting ago.
Yep.
And they're already in our system cooking. So, you know, you just got to let people know what you're looking for and then start nurturing that relationship.
I like it. You're 3.
We only got one rental. We only have one rental. And the thing is with that first rental, you got to have the big picture long term in mind. Because with that first rental at $200 a month or whatever that cash flow is, Ken, it's not super sexy.
No.
Doesn't feel sexy. And the fewer you have, the more risky it really is.
Mm-hmm.
So the quicker you can get up to 5 or 10, the better.
Yeah,
right?
10's like a really good place to be.
Yeah.
I know that's a lot.
Yeah.
But 10's a really good place to be. You have one go vacant, one
yes.
big expenditure. It's not the end of the world. You have one or two, one's vacant. It's not good.
Not good.
But
so
you have to get – everybody starts there. Everybody has one first. Yeah,
everybody's
so
got to start
it.
There. So be okay with that. But once you get that tenant place, start looking for that second one and get rolling. We didn't talk about the long-term financing.
Yeah, long-term financing is small local banks for the most part. Credit unions, you're going to go to those. They do asset-based lending, meaning they're going to – they can do residential based on your income, but they're going to heavily weigh approval of the loan on how the property produces and how much income the property produces itself. So it's called asset-based lending, commercial loans at small local banks. They hold the notes in-house. They build a portfolio of loans while you build a portfolio of houses.
Yeah.
Bank of America, Commerce Bank, they sell off your note.
Yeah.
They flip mortgages. and then small local banks hold them.
Yep. So you buy and rehab with this short-term money, whether it's private lenders or hard money lenders. Once it's rehab and fixed up, you take that to a small local bank. They'll refinance the hard money lender and or private money lender out of the deal, mm-hmm. pay them back, and then you have a monthly interest in principal payment you make to the bank from the rental income that you're receiving.
Correct.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So all right, now on to year three.
We're on to year three. We're becoming a millionaire in under 5 years. We only have $80,000 of equity so far. Mm-hmm. So far.
We got a long way to go.
We got 3 years to go. But any questions you guys have about building a rental portfolio or becoming a millionaire in under 5 years, please throw them in the chat. We'll get to them. So year three, Sam, I think you can add three in year three.
Three, okay.
Yep. So I think we've done one fix and flip, one burr, and it's time to start streamlining and get cooking here.
Hopefully we've developed and proven ourselves to hard money lenders and private money lenders and the bank at this point, and we've proven the concept, proven the model. I feel like, I've seen this out there, but, you know, that knowledge that we talked about in year one builds confidence, and then confidence leads to action. So your confidence should be high, and you should be ready to take action now is kind of what you're alluding to, correct?
Correct.
So you're going to hopefully have used private lender, have a couple private lenders and a couple hard money lenders in your pocket at this point. I mean, we are 3 years in. So hopefully you've developed some good relationships with those, and then you can tap on those relationships going forward to use to grow and scale, because you could potentially do this none at the same time. Every 4 months you do a new one, but that's hard to time. There's probably more likely, if you're doing three, there's going to be some point in the year where you're finishing up one and starting another.
Yeah.
Probably not, like, it shouldn't be too much of a lift. You're not going to be demoing two at the same time.
Yeah.
But demoing one, clearing one out at the same time while you're proving a 10 on the other one. So they're going to potentially overlap.
They come in waves. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't time this out perfectly, as Sam said. You want to jump on the good deals when they're there.
Yep. And
analyzing enough deals so you know what a good deal is a key part of this. If you got two in front of your face, go ahead and jump on them both. You can handle them. You might not get another one for the rest of the year. You just never know when that next one's going to come. So while it's there and you got the resources, jump on it.
Jump on it.
So that's three, year three.
So how much equity we got now?
So we have $320,000 worth of equity at the moment.
Because we got
four properties. Yep. $1.6 million portfolio value with $300,000 of equity.
And we're not even talking about any appreciation or anything like this yet.
Yep.
Or debt pay down, even though there is a little bit.
All right.
Cool. What are you doing to me in year four now, Walls?
We're doing five in year four.
Okay.
You're cooking. At this point, you're like, I got this.
Yeah, you should have some confidence and proof of concept to yourself as well as everybody you use.
Yep.
Okay. So what about some tips to that? Make sure that you are keeping track of everything as best you can as far as expenses go, so you can allocate to them to the proper properties as far as keeping expenses for taxes and things like that. The best thing to do is to just, you know, do the best you can to have some type of organization around that.
What's some of your limiting factors at this point, right? So that's a good one. Make sure your bookkeeping's dialed in. Property management, whether you're doing it or someone else's, make sure that's dialed in, so your portfolio that you have now is cash flowing while you go out and invest in other things. And then long-term financing, making sure you communicate with your long-term financing partners and understand where your guidance limits are, because that'll kind of, you know, steer your growth and how fast and how much you can grow, because they should tell you a guidance limit, like, hey, I'm good to do, you know, $2 or $3 million worth of, or $3 million worth of loans with you, and then you can go and grow to that size.
Yeah, and I get that this is a lot. We started slow in our scaling, but we're working on becoming a millionaire. This stuff does take work. This isn't something you can passively do and it's going to happen overnight. We're trying to, this is going to be a lot of work, a lot of effort to do this. You know, a five in a year is a lot, or is it six? Five in a year. Five this year is a lot.
Yeah,
I get that.
Year
it's gonna,
four.
It's going to push you. It's going to push you.
Yeah.
But we're creating wealth because of the ramifications of this five-year grind could lead to generational type of wealth, even just stopping after these 5 years.
Yeah, you were damn near an expert at this point. Mm-hmm. You're 4 years into this doing it very often.
Yeah, right? And this is a path that works. Though I guess the other point I want to make, well, is a lot of people are like, well, I'll just work my job and hope for promotions, or I'll just invest in crypto, hope it hits, or I'll just like do my 401k. Like, that's all fine to do, but this is a proven path. Just because it's not easy doesn't mean it's not, I mean, it's going to work. It's just not easy.
Just because year four might seem a little overwhelming now, but as you go through each of these years, it gets so much easier.
And this is simple, not easy. We're showing you a simple path to it, but it is not easy.
Yeah, you got to put in the work, but it's not rocket science.
Got to work.
Two idiots can do
it, right?
Who sings
that song? Yes, work.
Rihanna and Drake.
There you go.
Yeah.
Drake, have you ever seen Drake live, T-York?
He has.
He sure has. He said yes.
Yes.
He said yes. So, all right. So, year five, just to kind of wrap this up and cross
Whoa,
over.
Whoa, went down the wrong pipe. You keep going.
Cross over that million mark in equity. You need about three more, but I think we can do six in year five.
Okay.
I think we can continue doing better and get up to 15 houses in 5 years. Average value of about $400,000 per house with no appreciation. So, you have a $6 million rental portfolio at that point and $1.2 million in equity, and you're a freaking millionaire.
You're a millionaire.
In five years. And this is so possible. But like Sam and I freaking crushed this number, mm-hmm. first of all. And again,
we're idiots.
So we can do it.
We should change our podcast name to We're Idiots.
The Two Idiots. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of cool. I'm in. If it's self-proclaimed, it's okay. Right?
Correct.
All right. So this is a super possible path and not very aggressive because every single deal, this is going to get easier and easier and easier. And you'll probably blow this through the water. If you go all in on this, I am very confident you can get more than 15 houses in 5 years.
Yeah. And this
how many did we get in 5 years, Sam?
We had, I mean, we probably had about 100, right? Almost.
We're right at 100.
We're at 100, yeah.
Yeah, 108,
yep.
I think.
So, yeah, we can – and so anybody, like, they really can do this. I know we do make it sound simple.
And in year one and two, we did one the first year, two the second year.
Yeah, so it's a lot of work. This is not easy. But, again, we're building financial security, financial independence. You're able to own real estate. There's not really a better thing to own than a property on U.S. soil in this world. I mean, that's why BlackRock and all these people and – even a foreigner, Chinese government, that's why everybody buys real estate in the United States, because it's such a solid investment.
For sure. So, and you know, this is only 5 years from now, your portfolio is $6 million, but in 30 years from now, you know, it's going to double twice. So mm-hmm. it's going to be about $25 million, give or take, mm-hmm. and you're going to owe nothing on this in 30 years.
And that's if you stop. So Luke's saying you get to this point, it doubles again, because real estate doubles every 15 years, and you're going to, you know, be a extremely, extremely wealthy person that's going to be able to give money back to charities, do what they want when they want, pass some down to your kids, hopefully don't spoil them too much, but give them something to build off of, to fund a business that they want to start or something. You're just going to be able to really do and enjoy what you want. And like what we have is we are pretty well on this path to what you just mentioned, but we're still grinding work because we enjoy it. You got to do what you want.
Yeah.
You got to do what you enjoy.
For sure.
Money can't buy happiness, but it can allow you to do things that make you happy.
Gives you that flexibility. And if you have a portfolio of assets, you have that flexibility. So much you can do with this. You can sell them. You can refinance them. You can manage them yourself. You can play with your portfolio at this point and figure you can pay debt down faster if that's your thing. And there's a lot of financial freedom that'll come from this. It just won't be in year five.
Yes. And but you started that path. And assets don't create wealth. Equity and assets create wealth. And you're getting in this equity using none of your own money, and then you're letting real estate do what it does.
Yep.
I love it. Awesome. Anything else you got on this one?
No, man. I love that one.
That was a fun one.
That's what we did.
That was T-Jork's idea.
He's a stud.
He's all right.
Look at that guy.
The cream king.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. So let's get into would you rather. Is you ready for it?
Let's do it, man.
All right. So would you rather, Lucas, would you rather live on a boat or in a treehouse?
This is kind of cool. I like this question. I can envision
There's pros and cons
both.
To both. Yes. Yeah. You can actually envision yourself
I
doing
can.
Both.
Okay. Yeah.
You,
but frickin, the, I guess
you are
the,
a hippie.
But the boat I'm thinking of is a nice boat.
Yeah, but a nice treehouse as well.
Oh, yeah,
so
the treehouse.
Would you live in the trees or would you live on a boat? Both pretty nice.
Yeah. Man, that is good. I'm going to go with treehouse.
Okay, what's your reasoning?
I think I would get seasick being able to not, you know, but then I'd be in the air. Can I come down? How high
Yes, you're living in it. You go to work during the day. You're not, like, confined to this forever. You go to the work during the day, you just go home to a treehouse. You go to work the other day, you come home to a boat. I would assume, right?
No, I mean, I was thinking if you're on a boat, you're out on the ocean.
There's called ports and docks and things like that, Lucas.
Never heard of them.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
So you are. I've known that well before Ken ever saw your dumb face. But,
I'm going treehouse, dude. I think you'd be sick. I think you'd have a cool view and still have your feet planted on the ground at some point.
I think I would go boat just because it's a nice boat. And the reason why, and I'm sure this went through your – maybe it didn't because you're dumb, but – like you're much more mobile. You can take your house kind of wherever. Like yeah. you can be, and I agree with like, I'm assuming we're not all in like typhoon type weather. Like you can go in like ports and in inlets that are like smooth, and so you can go up the Mississippi, visit.
You want to travel.
Yeah,
like
you can travel a little more. Yeah. I like United States, so I wouldn't travel much further than that, but you can. You have the ability to be a little more mobile. I saw, but speaking of that, Lucas, I saw a video from a guy from Britain. He's like, I understand why the U.S. people don't, like, the people say they don't travel. It's because I guess this is different. He's like, the U.S. is way bigger than most people think. Yeah. He's like, each state is like its own country. He's like, in Europe, he can be in four countries in 45 minutes. They're almost like states.
Yeah, the U.S. is like bigger than Europe.
Yeah, and each state, like each state almost, is its all kind of its own like environment, and it's like their landscape changes. Yeah. Like you can be extremely well traveled and stay inside the United States. I guess people that have never been here don't know that. It was interesting.
And like, you know, we're in an interesting point like on the equator that like you go north country and it's, you know, cold and chilly and mountains. You go south country, it's the freaking Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Like it's crazy you can get that within your country, that type of range.
We're right there, like you said, the bottom of the country is, especially Florida, right near that equator. So it's just an interesting thing, because if anybody follows us at all, they know that I like to travel, but locally, I'm not a big like go to Europe guy. Maybe when I'm older.
I think London would be sick one of these days. But I'm not gonna go to London before I go to New York City. So I need to see New York City.
Yeah. It's so freaking cool. Yeah. So I've been to like 47 or 46 of the 50 states. So anyways, I've traveled locally or in the U.S. and it's fun. Good. All right, number two, you go.
All right, would you rather swim with eels or sleep in a bat-filled cave?
So
let's say a 10-minute swim.
So bats, I believe, do carry diseases. I don't love that. I also think bats stay the hell away from you. Mm-hmm. But bats are nocturnal, I believe. So, like, I'm sleeping, they're awake, or maybe I take a nap during the day. So it kind of depends. Don't love things in the water around me. Not my jam. Whether it's a fish.
Yeah.
I don't like something that's supposed to be in the water out of the water. I don't like to fish and touch the fish outside the water, let alone in their zone. Assuming I have like a mattress, I'm probably gonna sleep in the cave.
I'm gonna go sleep with cave too. Like, and what type of eel? Like, there's eels that like can kill.
Assuming
people.
A non-killable eel, just like killable. Just like a eel that's around.
Indestructible eel.
Yes, that's gonna be. Yeah, that should be like a cartoon character.
Yeah, again, give me. I don't want to be in the water, just like the boat. Like, give me in a cave, nice.
Yeah,
and dark.
I thought you're not a water guy. You love Florida.
Put your earphones on. I don't mind like swimming a little bit, but not like staying there for extended periods of time with animals with me.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I like that one. All right,
last one.
Would you rather have a mountain view or lit up skyscraper outside your bedroom window?
That's close for me, honestly. I could see, you know, I like the country, but I could see myself.
You've never been to New York, though. Maybe that would change your mind either way.
Yeah, either way. Yeah. I could see myself being a city guy. I see the appeal, even though I grew up in the country. And some people are like, oh, I hate that. I hate people. I want to be out all by myself, which I get too. Yeah. I get too. Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I think my answer would probably change at certain points of my life. I think at this point in my life, I'm going to go with the mountain view.
Go with the mountain view. Okay. Yeah.
But like I could see all of my 20s picking the skyscrapers and living in the heart of the city where things are pumping, things are moving. And that's where I want to be.
So I agree. I would rather be in the country living, but I'm reading this as just your view, like the view, like you can kind of be wherever you are. So outside where you live now, would you rather look at every day? I mean, it's impossible to look at and not live there, but would you rather look at skyscrapers or would you rather look at mountains living where you live? What? I think that's what it's supposed
to
say.
That's fine. Yeah. If you could put any view to your house.
Well, I'm not going to swim in a cave with bats, Lucas, either.
Well, I mean, that's like saying, oh, if I brought the bats into my room, and then you counted my room as a cave, and then
well,
I'm
no,
do
that,
that
said you sleep in the cave. Anyways, yeah, I don't know this one. I saying all that, I would still probably say the mountain view.
Yeah, in mountain views they're cool. They don't light me up as much as like some people. Like some people like love it.
Oh, Brian and Debbie love it. That's, they bought houses looking at a mountain. So yeah,
and it's cool, but yeah.
It is fun. Cool. Yeah. Awesome. All right. What else you got? Anything for him, Luke, before we shoot our game?
Nah, man. It's time to trash it. I think we're tied.
We are tied, yes, because I did eyes closed for you.
No, I liked this episode, too. I liked talking about Ken a little bit, digging into his company. I liked the you know, chunking down, becoming a millionaire in 5 years for somebody who's getting ready to start that journey, which is exciting. You're in the right place. And then obviously, Would You Rather is fun with you as well.
Awesome. I like it. And make sure to check out FasterFreedomFest.com. If you have not, it's a very inexpensive in-person event like nothing else out there. So, you know, just checking out the website does not require you to pay. So just go to FasterFreedomFest.com. Check it out May 9th and 10th in St. Louis in the room on the other side of that screen. This is in our office, so you will see this room on those days.
All right.
Trash it.
Shoot.
This is probably so bad for the radio audience.
I made mine. Oh, Sam, rimmed it in. Nice shot. Rim job. All right, 6-6. We're still tied. We'll see you guys on the next one.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. We hope you got some major value from our conversation. If you love what you learn, make sure you like, rate, review the show, and help us spread the word by telling a friend.
If you'd like to learn more about working with me inside one of my programs, we'll have those links in the show notes, along with all our social media handles, so you connect with us there for free. If there's a real estate question you'd like us to answer, feel free to send us a message, and we'll cover it in an upcoming show.